Welcome back to Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and the new 100.3 FM. Andy Bulbarch and Matt Douglas with you. And time now for our Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. We'll talk some Browns, some high school football, and much more with Fox 8's very own John Telich. JT, thank you as always for the time, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you? What's going on this outstanding Wednesday we've got?
So far, so good. Before we get into some of the Browns talk, I want to talk with you about something a little bit different here at the very, very beginning of our interview. I know, John, that you certainly had a pretty close relationship with the late Fred McLeod. I mean, just awful, awful news coming down the pipe yesterday about his passing. And you had tweeted yesterday that nearly 40 years ago, you ended up replacing him. And I just kind of wanted to give you an opportunity here before we get into the Browns talk to talk about your relationship with Fred and just what a wonderful person he was.
Yeah, everybody absolutely loved and respected Fred. And as you mentioned, Bull, 39 years ago, almost within a few days, I got the job at Channel 8, and I would be the weekend sports guy, and I was replacing Fred. And Fred was going out to San Francisco to be a sportscaster on TV out there. And I was exceptionally, you know, happy at getting an opportunity to come to my hometown and to work in the home market and cover the Indians, the Browns, and the Cavs and all high school football and stuff like that. And I couldn't have been more thrilled to have that opportunity. And, of course, Fred was in the same kind of boat. He was a, you know, a hometown kid, Strongsville, and he had an opportunity out west to do something, so he took that chance. And so after I got the job, I got a phone call from him not long afterwards, and he was just welcoming me to his old position, saying good luck to you, you know, giving me some advice and saying anything that he could do to help me. All I had to do was call. And so I thought that was super classy and, you know, very much what we've come to know that Fred has done, not just for back then a 27-year-old broadcaster or such as I was, but any young person that's trying to get into the business, a kid who might be doing broadcasting at St. Ignatius High School would call Fred, and Fred would be happy to not only just talk to him, but to critique their work and spend the time. So Freddie was just fantastic. And so even a couple of weeks after he called me, he called me again, and he was out in San Francisco just beginning his job there, and he said, you know, I was thinking about you and you trying to, you know, get more comfortable in your job. I did a couple of interviews with these athletes that have Cleveland ties, and I thought maybe, you know, they may help you with what you're trying to do back there in Cleveland. And so he sent me the tapes. Yeah, that was back in the days when you had videotape and you sent it via the mail or you sent it by an airplane. He sent me those tapes, and then that's what sparked just a relationship where we would keep tabs on each other, kind of look out for each other. If I had something I thought was interesting that might spin well in San Francisco, and then in later years when Fred was working TV jobs in Michigan, in Detroit, I would think the same way, and by all means, I would send him something, and then he'd send stuff my way. And then, you know, it just was kind of, I guess you would say, serendipitous that he would come back to Cleveland and then, you know, be the play-by-play broadcaster for all these years for the Cavs. And I'll say this about Freddie. He was that type of a person that I think a lot of people, and I was heavily in the Michael Regei, you know, I was a big-time backer of Michael. I worked with Michael on the Cavs broadcast on Fox Sports Ohio. I did the pregame and the postgame with Michael and with Bill Needle and Jim Jones. And so, you know, when this happened, when Michael was replaced by Fred, a lot of people were upset that that took place. But most people, I would probably say 99%, said, well, it's Fred McLeod, and Fred is just an incredibly seasoned professional, outstanding at what he does, and will do a great job. And so the hurt that we felt from Michael getting kind of nipped in the bud there in his opportunity was lessened a bit by knowing and respecting Freddie, and then Freddie made it work. Freddie just worked so hard at his job, and so just incredibly heavy heart to have heard the news yesterday morning that he had passed, and obviously my thoughts and prayers to Beth, to his family, to the whole Cavs family, everybody at Cleveland Clinic Courts and people in the offices just stunned over the news. And so, you know, Godspeed, Freddie. Rest in peace, my friend.
Yeah, we certainly echo that here as well at AM 930 WEOL. I mean, our condolences to the friends and family of Fred McLeod. Moving on to some Browns talk, my friend. You know, rehashing Sunday, that was a pretty painful experience. There were a number of things that just did not go well, but I think the flurry of penalties, that really stood out. 18 penalties on the opener, that's a really difficult thing to stomach. How do they move past this, and how do they make that stop?
Well, first of all, you have to not only be better disciplined, but I think you also have to play under control a little bit. And I think they got baited in a couple of those, Myles Garrett and the kick by Greg Robinson. Those would be examples of that. And then, you know, there were procedural penalties on defense, just offsides. Defense was a little bit too aggressive at times. I think there was one series, Bull, when and I joked saying that they literally marched down the field on a carpet of yellow, and that's what they did, the Titans did. There were four penalties, I think 45 yards combined, which is just absolutely inexcusable. So they cleaned that up. I would be incredibly shocked if they came back out this next week and had, you know, anything remotely approaching 18 penalties. I mean, even 10 is egregious.
Yeah, no question about that. And again, that was one of many, many things that went wrong. I want to focus on Baker Mayfield for just a moment here. Let's talk about the wrist and what needs to change with Baker Mayfield for the Browns to try and get back to 500 next week.
Well, last week I thought he tried to, you know, he held on to the ball too much. I think that's been well documented. In fact, there is a stat as far as the percentage of downfield passes and who was most you know, let's say downfield pass happy, and he was like the eighth in the league in trying to force passes down the field as opposed to take the simpler stuff a little bit closer at hand. So I think he held on to the football a little bit too much. And then credit the Titans. You know, they had people in pass coverage a little bit more so than I think he was prepared for or wanted to adapt to, and they continued to throw the ball in those windows that weren't really, there were super tight windows, if that at all. And so that's on Baker, obviously. But I think also it's got to be on the offensive play calling as well, because I just don't think they used the running game enough. They came out in that first drive, and it was 11 personnel, and they played most of the game with the 11 personnel, the one running back, the one tight end, and the three wide, OBJ and Jarvis getting all those snaps, and then Hollywood and Ratley finishing up pretty much. They fell into a trap of just pass, 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 and I just don't think they gave the run game enough, you know, throttle, if you will.
And that leads us into our next question, because I think a lot of people believe the same thing you do about the running game just not being used enough. How do they get Nick Chubb more involved on Monday?
Yeah, I was very – I just thought if you looked at the percentages that – you know, what Chubb was getting per carry, it was healthy enough. And they just, I think they just forced things too much, and I think some of that's the play calling. That one series when Baker got hurt down by the goal line, I have no idea why they kept trying to throw the football in there, why you don't just punch it out, get 4 or 5 yards, and then give yourself some breathing room. So better coaching obviously needed, and then Baker – has to make a quick decision and get rid of stuff. And if it's underneath stuff and dink and dunky kind of things, well, that's what you do until you find better avenues and better opportunities to take a shot down the field. But I just think they gave up on that running game, as you mentioned, way too soon, way too soon.
Fox 8's John Telich joining us here on the Budweiser's From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. Looking ahead to next week, the highly anticipated matchup with the interim head coach last year of the Browns, Greg Williams. He's, of course, the DC with the New York Jets. What do you expect from his Jets defense on Monday night?
Well, I think he's going to blitz. I mean, that's kind of the way he does things. He blitzes and he likes to have his guys play man, so you know the receivers have got to run great routes and they've got to get separation to early in their explosions in order for Baker to see them and deliver the football. Now last week against the Buffalo Bills, I mean, I guess you would come out and say 17 points, that's a pretty good job by the defense if we're talking about Greg Williams and the Jets defense. So they allowed 17 points. They did lose by one to Buffalo. So if he can come back in game number two and limit an offense like the Cleveland Browns with Baker and OBJ and company, if he can do that again, they'll be saying, hey, this was a great hire as the DC for the New York Jets. But, you know, if they're going to blitz, you got to make them pay. And you have to get, obviously, much better play from your offensive line. And I think it would go a long way if your starting left tackle doesn't get ejected from the game very early. That probably would be a good start.
Yeah, that would be a really nice place to start. That way you're not going 2 and 3 deep on your offensive line, especially at that left tackle position. No question about
that. Exactly.
Well, looking at the signal caller for the Jets, I think he and Baker Mayfield are going to be compared fairly or unfairly for the rest of their careers. But, you know, Sam Darnold is a guy that certainly has a great deal of tools at his disposal, and he's the kind of guy, I think, that people very quietly concern this Browns defense. What exactly concerns you about Sam Darnold on Monday?
Well, what he did last week in their first game was he took a lot of the conservative underneath stuff for the most part, and he continued to try to mine that as best as possible. He took occasional shots down the field. I think they'll do a little bit more of the same this week. He's a good quarterback, a good young developing quarterback, and so it's going to be fun to see the matchup between those two guys. But I think last week he threw 41 passes, most of them, as I mentioned, on the underneath variety, and it was so unlike what you got from Marcus Mariota. Mariota threw a couple of long balls, but for the most part, a lot of what he, you know, went to town on was screens and, you know, quick stuff to negate the pass rush of Garrett and company. And so I just think they've got to play the similar brand of football that they played last year when they took on the Jets and Darnold. They kind of would have I think they got to force him into making bad throws. So there's going to be a real need for the front four to get great pressure on this young guy without having to blitz. I think the Browns blitzed a little bit this past week because other things didn't seem to be working for them because Mariota was getting rid of the football quick. So I think they put a little bit more pressure on him, and if they can do it with the front four, then as we've spoken about on other episodes of this show, you can get all the help you need from the back seven people, linebackers and the DBs, if you're doing it well with the big boys up front.
Want to focus on Odell Beckham Jr. for just a moment here, JT. I mean, this is the kind of guy I think that Browns fans expect the world from this year, fairly or unfairly. You know, this whole watch thing has taken center stage the last couple of days. Are we making too much of this watch saga?
Well, I want to interpret what he said yesterday. In the locker room, he did a real short little session with some writers. He didn't speak in front of the TV cameras. I think he's scheduled to do that on Thursday, so we'll see what he says tomorrow. But his whole contention is that the watch is not a hard object. It's made of plastic. My retort to that would be plastic and $190,000. Are you kidding me?
Right.
But, you know, it is. He says it's plastic. He says other guys wear knee braces that have metal in them. He says guys do wear jewelry at times. No one squawks about that per se. And so he's kind of, I don't know if it's being adamant or just being bullheaded about it. He says he will wear that again. He will come out and expect to see him wear a watch or whatever he wears in game number two. And so it sounds to me like it's just an attention kind of thing. I mean, what do you need a watch for during a football game? Come on. And so are we making too much of it? Probably making too much of the fact that just drop it. You know, this is a team game. You don't need a watch on a football field. What are you doing? He insists that he's not a brand ambassador for this Richard Mille, or however you say this watch brand. He says he is not. So then, okay, great. Then if you're not, then wear a Timex out on the field. But it just sounds very bizarre. And I know they kind of signed up for a little bit of this because he's so so much a followed athlete, not just in the U.S., but worldwide. And so what he does kind of reverberates across the globe, much less just here in the States. But I just don't think it's necessary to be wearing a watch to play football. It just seems a little counterintuitive in my book.
I think a lot of people certainly agree with that. And well, let's look ahead to Monday. I know we've touched on a couple storylines surrounding the game on Monday night. JT, I know you think this is a borderline must-win game for the Browns on Monday night. Why is that?
Well, because you just don't want to go into the Sunday night affair against the high-powered Rams 0-2, and there's just a ton of pressure that goes with that. I'll give you this. The Browns' schedule in the second half of the season lightens up a little bit, and so you would argue, well, you know, if they go 0-2, but yet they still, let's say, come out of the first half of the season at 4-4, they'll have a chance to recoup some of their losses, if you will, in the second half. I'll give you that. But I just don't think you want to go in 0-2 to a game against the Rams, knowing that the rest of the schedule, early part of the schedule, sets up to be pretty difficult for you. It's just inviting disaster, and that's why I think they've really got to go in there and play their best performance of the year. When you look back halfway through the season, you should be able to look back and say what they did on that Monday night in September against the Jets in the Meadowlands, that's how the Browns should be playing this year. That's what they have to go in there and do.
Certainly looking forward to it on Monday night, no doubt about that. JT, will close out here with some high school football talk. Hard to believe, but we're just about 3 weeks in to this high school football season. Some really good games on the slate this Friday night, one of which out this direction you guys will have a presence at.
Yes, it's one of our games that's being voted upon. We have four games that are up for the Friday night touchdown game of the week, and the Elyria Catholic and Bay game is one of those. So, first of all, if you want that game to get the extended coverage, go to Fox8.com and vote. But number two, it's measuring up to be a pretty good football game. I'm excited about that. And I'm also interested to see, Bull, just how well Ignatius can play with Hoban. Ignatius lost last week. Great game. I was at that mentor Ignatius game, and that was just tremendous high school football at its best. And I want to see how they bounce back, and then I want to see how dominant of a team the Akron Hoban Knights are, because a lot of people around the state are just saying they're the best team in Ohio, bar division, best of any of the Division I schools, even though there are two, better than any other school in the state of Ohio. So I'm just curious to see how they measure up against an Ignatius, and then that will obviously also give you kind of a litmus test to see, you know, how good you can compare Ignatius to St. Ed's, or you compare those some of the other big schools. But Hoban is a beast. They are an absolute beast. And another game we have is Nordonia and Mayfield, and they've had great battles over the years, and I would assume this will be no different than anything they've had going back to the days when Macon played at Nordonia, or going back to the days when Mayfield had guys like Isabella playing for them, or when Nordonia had Denzel Ward playing for them. It's going to be exciting to see that stuff.
Absolutely. Well, John, always a pleasure to catch up, my friend. We enjoy this every week, and we certainly look forward to doing this again next week.
You betcha. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Bull.
Thank you, John. Again, that's Fox 8's very own John Telich joining us on the Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. Time for a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Matt and I will return with more after this here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.